Drew Wrigley, back with us on What's On Your Mind. Hello, Drew. How are you?
Good morning, Scott. Good to be with you and your listeners.
Glad to have you back on the program. I want to ask you first for a little bit of an overview for the federal government role, for the U.S. Justice Department and its role in combating what everybody's seeing on their TV screens right now, lawlessness, a lot of lawlessness, right? Riots and, you know, political agendas being used to harm cops or defame cops or throw rocks at cops or provoke cops or whatever. Is there a federal role for in these incidents?
Oh, there certainly is, Scott. And just so that your listeners are aware, from the earliest hours of the riots and the disruptive activities that took place on May 30th in Fargo, and have continued around the country, the Department of Justice nationally has been very involved. I was on the phone multiple times that night with the main justice, with the people in D.C., to apprise them both of what was happening in Fargo, and then also, they wanted my full assessment of sort of the state resources that were available, whether you know the National Guard, the administration, that was in place in our governor's office, the local police and sheriff and other law enforcement, what those response capabilities are. And I was, and I'm not just saying this because I'm on the air with you, I was able to obviously report that just at the highest level of professionalism and capability, we have the ability as a state to respond. A lot of what people saw that night and in these instances around the country, a lot of it predominantly, they are violations of state statute and or municipal regulation of some kind, by and large, but not always. And where appropriate, the Department of Justice is dedicated to stepping into that role. And that's what we did last week with regard to Eric Stephen Toa, who is the first defendant that we've indicted as a result of that uprising here in North Dakota.
So yeah, I remember back to the Dakota Access Pipeline protest at a time where you were lieutenant governor of the state. And it seemed to me a lot of the charges, you saw what you saw and you said, come on, what? I mean, this can't continue to happen. Yeah. And people were arrested and people were, jailed and bailed out immediately. And then the charges were, rather scattered, right? You'd had hundreds of arrests. I forget the number, but a lot less actually charged out. Is it easier for a federal charge to stick, if you will, versus, a county attorney doing that?
No. No, it's not. And law enforcement's work is very complicated in this. When I say no, in some degrees, it can sometimes be more difficult because we have an additional element. Perhaps we have to also prove not only the disruptive riotous conduct, but that it somehow impacted interstate commerce or somehow was conducted by communications across state lines or traveling for the purpose of engaging in that conduct. So there sometimes are additional elements. It really comes down to whether it's appropriate for there to be federal involvement or not. One of the things I said last week, I met with the media following Mr. Toa's initial appearance, and I pointed out that the riots themselves, the disruptive conduct, the civil disorder, has definitely been federalized. It has been nationalized all across the United States. And so what an appropriate situation for the Department of Justice to then also, to some degree, to an appropriate degree, federalize and nationalize the response. Attorney General Barr and his team in D.C. have been really masterful at engaging the United States attorney community all across. There are 93 U.S. attorney's offices around the United States, engaging us and our leadership of federal resources all across the country. And you're seeing indictments. It takes a little longer sometimes, the charging process and the investigation process. It oftentimes involves telephones and computer communications, et cetera. But where appropriate, we're bringing those charges, not just here in North Dakota, but across the United States.
Yeah, and so is it easier to get it to stick? Your point is no, that's always tough, no matter what level it is at. But federal law has more teeth, does it not, as far as how many times you can pull stuff like this before you end up with a felony or the actual charges or basically some things that would be more appropriate for the actual act. Am I right there?
Yeah, by and large, I think that is true, that the sanctions are both oftentimes more apparent on the front end. We can't guarantee a sentence, but they're oftentimes somewhat enhanced from state penalties. Also, in the federal system, they serve their penalties without the possibility of parole. There's no parole in the federal system. And anybody who knows me, I've been doing this work for 16 years. It's not one of my objectives to stack human beings like Cordwood. We I don't want to say intervene. We step into this role where appropriate and where we believe that the defendant and his or her conduct merits the use of federal resources and the potential for the federal sanctions that come into place. Mr. Toa, as a result of what we allege is his conduct from the night of the 30th or the afternoon and evening of May 30th, he's facing the possibility of up to 5 years in federal prison and a $250,000 fine. And whatever sentence, if he is convicted, whatever sentence he gets, if he's incarcerated by the judge, he would serve that in a federal penitentiary versus, the Cass County Jail or out in Bismarck. There's an important deterrent effect. It's why we talk about these matters publicly. People need to understand, we are through our work at the Department of Justice and here at the U.S. Attorney's Office in North Dakota, we are very energetically doing our work in a way that we hope helps preserve the right of any group, without reference to what their perspective might be. It preserves the right for people to lawfully assemble and petition their government without fear that there could be violence breaking out or that someone might come in and try to hijack what's going on.
That's a great point.
That's a
great point. People should be able, no matter what their beliefs, to go out there and not have to worry about it. Yeah.
I can tell you, there were people in my office, who have chosen not to participate in lawful expression of their First Amendment perspectives and views. They've chosen not to do that in the wake of the violence from May 30th. Individuals in the U.S. Attorney's Office who they and their family members wanted to avail themselves of one or more subsequent assemblies, but they made the decision. It was too risky. You just don't know what's going to erupt. That's not right. It's also not just the U.S. Attorney's Office. All across our communities, there would be more participation. If I'm planning a march in 5 months, pick the subject, whatever it might be. Drew Wrigley's going to lead a march in 6 months. I ought not have to calculate. I wonder if we can be supplanted. I wonder if we could be hijacked by some violent people, agitators, people to come in and do destructive, harmful, dangerous things. That shouldn't be part of the calculation. It's our role to, I said a year from now, nationwide, we'll know. We'll know whether we banded together and we fought hard to protect people's right to lawfully assemble and petition their government. And it's going to take stiff-spined law enforcement to accomplish that.
Tell me quickly, I have about a minute left. Eric Stephen Toa, what do we know about his past record? Where is he from? Has he done this elsewhere?
Well, I'm not at liberty to talk about any of that, unfortunately, Scott. I just, he grew up out of state. He didn't grow up in North Dakota, and that's fine, right? We welcome folks from all over the country and the globe here to our communities. We have a diversifying citizenry and economy and everything else that we're excited about here in North Dakota and around this region. So that's not really the issue. But now he didn't grow up here, and I can't really go into his background and what we allege to be his conduct outside of what's been articulated in the complaint so far.
Here's what I'd like to say: if he is convicted with what you've charged him with and receives 5 years and a $250,000 fine, there will be a lot less people that'll do what he did here, right?
Yep. I think that's exactly right. And it really helps underscore our support of the work of law enforcement entities, like in this particular instance, most pointedly, Fargo Police and the Cass County Sheriffs. And I know that they had brothers and sisters from all over law enforcement come in and assist them. But I hope people understand how well we were served by the leadership of those organizations, by the men and women in uniform. That night, they stood out there. They were professional. They were effective. They pretty rapidly dissipated the riots and the disruption, and thankfully it was done without loss of life. There was a lot of damage to property and people were injured, and I know that they're even more prepared for the next time. I could not be more proud of our law enforcement, and we're proud to work hand in glove with them, hopefully for the right sanctions going forward. Our investigations continue. We've so far indicted or charged one defendant. There are several others who continue under investigation, and I know that's true in the state as well.
Is this individual still in jail, or is he bail? Is he
remains in custody? Yes, he does remain in custody at this time.
Got it. All right. Thank you, Drew. Appreciate the time. Drew Wrigley, U.S. Attorney for the District of North Dakota. Our final segment coming up.